World leaders are reacting to President Trump's decision to withdraw the United States from the Paris Climate Accord. Here's French President Emmanuel Macron.
I do think it is an actual mistake, both for the U.S. and for our planet.
So how is the decision playing in this country? Let's get to our weekly political roundtable.
Jesse Holland is with the Associated Press. Hi, Jesse.
How you doing?
And Chad Pergram, who covers Congress for Fox News, is here too. Hi, Chad.
Great to be with you.
Chad, let's start with you. Here's the president speaking yesterday, laying out his reasons for pulling out of the Paris deal.
At what point does America get demeaned? At what point do they start laughing at us as a country? We want fair treatment for its citizens, and we want fair treatment for our taxpayers. We don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore, and they won't be. They won't be.
So, Chad, stark contrast there between how French President Macron says his country sees the pullout and then how Trump says foreign leaders will actually perceive this. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, this is a trend that we're seeing in global politics right now of isolationism. We've seen this to some degree in Europe with Brexit and even Scottish independence. This is an issue here that President Trump talked about on the campaign trail, and he's making good on that. The question is whether or not this will, you know, get coal jobs back in West Virginia and those places, Western Pennsylvania, places, I should add, that he performs so well. And now he's getting an earful from the left, probably similar to what the French leader said here. The House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi has long said that climate change is her, quote, flagship issue. And she said at her press conference, quote, how are you going to explain this to your grandchildren, Mr. President? And she said, almost every schoolchild knows more about climate change than the president. He lives in a fact-free zone.
Well, and we heard just today from Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary, the former economic advisor to President Obama. And here's what he said.
I believe it's the biggest U.S. foreign policy error since the Iraq War. And its consequences will be of even longer duration.
And then we also spoke yesterday, before the decision was made, with the Republican Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe about the accord. Here's what he had to say.
Constitute probably the largest tax increase in the history of America, and you don't get anything for it.
Jesse, you hear the two sides there. Obviously, President Trump went with the Republican view there from James Inhofe and others.
Well, like Chad said, this is something that he had talked about for a long time. But one of the interesting things we see now on this is that the actual cities in America are breaking away from the federal government on this issue. In fact, 70 cities around the country have said they're going to go with the Paris Accords on their own, even without federal help. So even with President Trump saying America is going to pull out of this, you have American politicians on the ground in the city saying we're going to go ahead anyway.
Jesse, does that matter? Can these cities actually make a difference with these policies?
Well, okay, now you're getting into a whole nother subject, because the Republicans will say, well, what beyond a quote unquote tax increase did the Paris Accords give America anyway? So yes, these cities think they can move ahead and actually make a difference on their own, regardless of what the federal government says. The question will be is, are they actually right?
It almost strikes me, too, that this is a situation where President Trump felt that he had to go big. Remember, on the campaign trail, he talked about completely withdrawing from NAFTA. He didn't do that. Again, that is an issue that holds a lot of sway with his voters in those rural areas, those steel country areas in West Virginia and Western Pennsylvania and Northern Ohio that I talked about a little bit ago. He didn't go full bore on NAFTA. So maybe the president felt he had to go full bore on the climate change issue with the Paris Accord.
Well, Chad, would he have been punished by his base if he had gone the other way on the Paris Accord and stayed in?
Well, he wasn't punished on NAFTA. That's the interesting thing. And so, you know, maybe he felt he had to throw a bone out there somewhere. And that's why this was so significant, was that this is probably, you know, the biggest overt policy shift that we've seen from this president, aside from maybe the immigration executive orders and things like that a few months ago.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something that is not climate related, because we'll be talking about climate all day, I'm sure. James Comey, former FBI director, expected to testify in Congress next week. Jesse, what are we expecting to see there? Fireworks?
Well, there will be a little bit of fireworks, but we have to keep in mind that James Comey is a lifelong prosecutor. He knows what he can and cannot say. He knows places where he can go and where he can't. So you'll see lawmakers trying to push him into push him into corners and push him into areas where they want him to talk about. You'll hear Republicans want to talk about unmasking, and you'll hear Democrats want to talk about Russia. But James Comey is not going to say anything that's going to put any investigation in trouble, because that's the life he's lived for so long. He's not going to set one foot out of line in his testimony.
Chad, do you agree with that? And what are you expecting from Comey next week?
Well, again, there has been consultation between Comey and also Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor here, and that there – just the fact that that went on, which is appropriate, and we would expect that, there's going to be certain things that James Comey is not going to be able to answer. This is something that's going to come up in closed sessions. There is a little bit of tension right now between the House – between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. Chuck Grassley, the Republican senator from Iowa, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, along with Dianne Feinstein, the Democratic senator from California, were very upset that Comey was not going to come before their panel as the former FBI director. That is the Committee of Jurisdiction, and he's going before the Senate Intelligence Committee. There are some on Capitol Hill who think, even though there may be some fireworks, there may be some times where he doesn't answer questions, that it may come back to say, okay, let's do this in closed session. And I should point out something that was just announced. The Senate Intelligence Committee on Wednesday is going to have an open and closed hearing with the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, McCabe, who's the number two at the FBI now, and also the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. That's important because they're going to be dealing with FISA, which is the Special Surveillance Court, and the renewal of what we call 702, which is this area that's kind of a little vague that deals with domestic surveillance. You can imagine that there's going to be a lot of conversation at that hearing on Wednesday, the day before Comey appears, that deals with the unmasking issue.
And just,
that could be even more explosive.
That just got more complicated than that story already was. So
we do a lot of that this year, I noticed.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick, Jesse, is there any chance that the president pulls executive privilege here to actually block Comey from going before Congress?
I've sort of given up on predicting what President Trump will or will not do, but there is always that possibility. Now, the question is, will James Comey, even if he tries to pull executive privilege, will James Comey accept that?
We heard from President Putin this week, Vladimir Putin. He did an interview with NBC anchor, new NBC anchor, Megyn Kelly. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Your girl, that is 3-year-old, can perpetrate such an attack. And they present it like this. They can pass it off like this, and they can. These specialists can invent anything, and then they will blame someone else.
So, Jesse, he's saying there that a 3-year-old could have done the attack on the U.S. in terms of the hacking leading up to the election. What do you make of how he is behaving, how Putin is behaving, and how it plays here?
Well, let's just say I have an 8-year-old, and I don't think he could have pulled it off. I mean, he's good, but I don't know if he could have pulled that off. I mean, but honestly, what do you expect the leader of a foreign country that is sometimes considered an adversary to the United States to say? Do you expect him to actually say, yeah, we did it, and what you going to do about it? No, he's not going to say anything like that. So I don't take that as to mean actually anything, because even if Russia was officially behind it, they're not going to come on American television and say it. So I don't take those words to mean pretty much anything.
Well, look, even Hillary Clinton was talking about Russia. She was at the annual Recode conference in California. She complained that the Democratic Party data that she had during her campaign was mediocre to poor and non-existent, that it was wrong. But she also said this.
The Russians, in my opinion, and based on the intel and counterintel people I've talked to, could not have known how best to weaponize that information unless they had been guided.
Chad, it's interesting to hear Hillary Clinton's voice pop up in the news here. But what do you make of her comments on Russia first, and then also the fact that she really threw a lot of Democrats under the bus yesterday?
Well, she did because, and you talked about the data, nobody really knew what was going to happen. I mean, I was told that on election night over at the Republican National Committee that as late as 9:30 that night, they thought that President Trump's electoral threshold, the highest he could get, was somewhere in the low 200s. You know, so none of this data is out there. It is interesting to hear, Clinton, when she's not walking in the woods, getting back into the public fray here. I will say, though, and this speaks to the Putin element of this, there are a lot of people people to blame. There's a lot of situations that people could not have read. And you know, this was almost an unmodelable election. That's what the pollsters will tell you. But that Vladimir Putin, at the end of the day, you have to remember that his background is in judo. He is a judo master, and he is a judo master politically as well. What that means is when you're in judo, you use your opponent's strength against you. And if Russia did meddle, well, that might have been part and parcel of what happened last fall.
Okay, we just have a few seconds left, but I just want to ask each of you just like a one-word answer here. Percentage chance that the American Health Care Act, the Republican health care bill, actually becomes law at this point as you see it, Chad?
Very tough, because the Senate doesn't have much time and they're going to get overrun by the debt ceiling, which is another conversation. And that's going to occupy most of the time this summer.
Jesse?
It's extremely unlikely. I would almost say zero, but let's give it a 5%.
All right. Jesse Holland of the Associated Press and Chad Pergram of Fox News, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.